The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Hello everybody, it's Claire Williamson and this is A Little Bit Booked on Fresh FM. I am just going to jump right into it because today I am beyond stoked to be chatting with Kate Camp. Kate has authored many collections of poems, including The Mirror of Simple Annihilated Souls and How to Be Happy Through Human, New and Selected Poems, plus a collection of essays named after an excellent and very catchy song. You probably think this song is about you. And today she's here to let us just a little bit into her teenage mind, thanks to her latest memoir, Leather and Chains, My 1986 Diary, which was out from Te Herenga Waka University Press last month. Kia ora, Kate.
Yeah, nice to see you.
Thank you for joining me virtually for this chat. What have you been reading recently?
I've actually been listening to quite a few audiobooks recently. I never had been into them until a couple of years ago. And with the re-election of Trump, I was like, oh, I need to stop listening to podcasts. So I've been listening to one of the Volander murder mysteries. I find like I tend to listen to mainly genre fiction. And when I read in a physical book, I read the physical book. So yeah, my current reading is audiobook reading.
Are you any good at predicting the twists or the whodunits in murder mysteries or anything?
Not really. I feel I am good with TV programs. I can usually feel like, oh, this is going to become significant later. But yeah, and then poetry-wise, I've been reading Bill Manhire's new book, Lyrical Ballads, and Jenny Bornholt's What to Wear. I bought them both recently at their launches in Wellington, and they're two of my favorite poets, and just been loving those.
Do you read more, would you find you read more poetry or more, you know, fiction or nonfiction or prose, shall I say?
Way more prose, yeah. I mean, normally I'm reading novels all the time, whereas I really only read poetry, more occasionally. I mean, I always read poetry for an hour a week because that's my writing practice. When I'm writing poetry, I always read poetry first. But yeah, novels are usually my main diet.
I wish I knew how to approach reading poetry. I find that I'll read a poem and often I'll be like, oh, that sounded nice. And then I kind of don't really know where to go from there.
Yeah, I sort of think for a lot of people, it's better to listen to someone reading it aloud and just go to poetry readings and it's more approachable that way.
Mm. Well, that leads me quite nicely into my kind of next question, which is, you have read excerpts of The Diary with a capital D, two audiences at Bad Diaries Salon. And for those people, including myself, who haven't been fortunate enough to attend one of these, could you give us a quick overview of The Diary and how you started reciting it aloud?
Yeah, so 8 or 9 years ago, Tracy Farr, the wonderful novelist, approached me. She was running this thing called Bad Diary Salon at Verb Literary Festival, and it was where writers read from their diaries. Doesn't have to be teenage diaries, but from their diaries, and they read unedited, without comment, just raw content from their diaries or journals. And she had heard me speak at something and had a funny feeling that maybe I would have a teenage diary. And turns out I did. And I had only kept a diary for 1 year of my life, which was 1986. And that was the year I turned 14 in the middle of that year. So just for whatever fateful reason, I kept a diary every single day of that year, having never kept one before and never kept one since. And fate dictates that I have then kept a hold of that diary, and I've had that diary with me ever since. So yeah, that first Bad Diary Salon, I got up and I read about a dozen pages from the diary, and it was extremely cathartic. The diary is really funny, it's also really sad, it's just very pretentious, it's quite crazy, it's like the dark and the light, you know. So it was really great to read it in the room. And then she invited me back. And so every year since then, I've read from the diary at Bad Diary Salon.
Do you read the same kind of approximately 12 entries each time, or do you kind of mix it up?
No. I mean, Tracy says it's like choose your own adventure. I always read 1 January and 31 December, and then I always choose different entries. Some of them might be the same ones, but yeah, so I'd been, you know, selecting entries and browsing through for ones to read and had read different ones, but I'd never actually read the diary in full, cover to cover myself. And so as it got closer to 40 years since I wrote the diary, I thought, oh, maybe I should do a project on this diary. And so I decided in 2024 that I would read each day, I would read one page from the diary, and then I would write a response to that. And so that's what I did every day for 2024. I just read that day's page and wrote something and kind of experienced the diary myself in real time. And that kind of forms the basis of the book, and then with essays kind of either side.
Yeah, so for people who haven't read it yet, and we're kind of going to try and avoid bunny quotes spoilers, which is kind of weird to say because your life can't really be spoiled. But the format of the book is there's an entry usually on the left-hand side and then contemporary Kate's reactions and explanations and context provided on the right. What, you know, kind of based on your experiences from Bad Diaries, Salon, what did you hope people would take away from reading this year of your life?
I mean, not so much from the Bad Diaries Salon maybe, but more from my just general writing life as a poet and then having published the memoir. I think I've always been a kind of confessional poet and written about my own experiences. And what I've learned over the years is that when you write what is true for you, it is true for other people too. Not that they've had the same experience or maybe not even anything like it, but there's just something that has the ring of truth and that connects with people. And, you know, I've just always try and tell myself just to have faith and have trust that if something is meaningful to me, then it will have meaning for other people. And that's all I can, you know, that's all I can hope, and that's what I expected. And I did think that, you know, I feel like there was always going to be a feminist dimension to this project, because writing about yourself as a woman, writing about yourself as a young woman, yeah, I mean, I say in the blurb of the book, you know, it's a dangerous thing to be a teenage girl, and thanks patriarchy, and that's true. And, you know, so I knew that there was going to be, you know, an examination of themes around sexual misadventure, sexual assault, you know, kind of patriarchal ideas of femininity and all that kind of stuff. I knew that would all be wrapped up in it. And I thought that, you know, women who are now in our 50s and have, you know, less fluffs to give would probably really enjoy reflecting on that.
I think increasingly women of any age have fewer Fs to give. I'm currently reading a book called Girl on Girl, and I'm spacing on the author's name currently, but it kind of examines all major media from like the early 90s to present day. So cinema, film, music, literature, reality TV, and the TLDR of that is the pornography industry's influence. Misogynistic influence on everything is pernicious, continuing, and not great.
Yeah. And so, yeah. And I mean, I'm very aware, I don't have kids, but, you know, I know a lot of women of my age who have teenage daughters and other kids. And yeah, I'm aware that there's a whole world of horrors out there for the teenager today. But I guess, you know, one of the things that probably surprised me about the diary, I'd kind of looked on the diary as being a document of that it was very funny, yes, but also that it was a document of a lot of like sad stuff and, you know, my parents' marriage breakdown and, you know, unhealthy sexual behaviors and addictions and, you know, a lot of things having a kind of origin, dark origin story at that time. But I think I was actually pleasantly surprised at just the energy and the kind of balls on this girl, you know, and like just the general, yeah, I mean, I was surprised to find how much I enjoyed being in the company of this 13 and 14-year-old Kate, who maybe, you know, is like super cringe, but yeah, actually has also got a lot of attitude and is really smart. And yeah, I found that pleasantly surprising and heartening.
I mean, you just had, it felt like to me like you just had so many great friends, and obviously some of them were frenemies and some of them ebbed and flowed, but I love I love the combination of banality and then, you know, poignant one-liner, and then back to listing all the things that you got at the thrift shop, and then there's a line from Rocky Horror, and then, you know, it's no Cameron, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, it's very erratic. And I think I think my poetry to this day has a quality of just including a whole lot of things and like whiplash changes of tone and direction and seemingly unrelated content. And that was obviously something I got into very young.
Well, for me in particular, reading it kind of made me think of my own teenage diaries, of which I had many, though also, like you, I've fallen out of the regular habit. And I did text my mother, and I was like, because I still have them all, they're in a shoebox. And I was like, Mom, are they easily accessible? I want to like try and get some. She's like, no, sorry, you can't get to them. They're in the storage unit. I'm like, okay. But I know that the first one was part of a 2-pack from Costco, and it had like martini olives on the cover, which in sixth grade, I clearly thought that was so cool. And then I know that my friend and I, we read Anne Frank's diary, and again, it would have been in school, and we were like, oh my God, yes, we must have journals. And we wrote journals to each other, and we had like a sisterhood style one we passed around that was full of marker scribbles and talking about our crush and probably stupid doodles and other teenage shenanigans. And I will confess, I also signed off one of my journals with a made-up name, Selenie, for a very long time because I thought it was cool. And clearly it was, I don't know, a persona I was trying on. And all of this monologue to say is I hadn't really thought of all of that as a performance or as art until reading your reflections on your own literary and kind of explorations and writing as a teenager. And I'd love to kind of unpack your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I saw the diary at the time that I was writing it as any kind of art or literary work. But then as I say that, I'm sort of writing like I am sometimes writing poems that have titles. So yeah, it's a very sort of strange grey area. And I think, you know, I mean, I studied English at university, you know, I'm aware of postmodernism. so I kind of, you know, I feel like all of the things that I know intellectually about postmodern literary theory are borne out in my own experience of encountering this diary. It's like a one-woman personal experiment in postmodernism, because I see how any narrative that claims to be just a straightforward account of the human psyche is a performance. I see how identity is constructed, and I see how you're always negotiating a sense of your identity through time, of how, who you were and who you weren't. And I see how memory is so unreliable, and you have false memories as well as things that you just totally blank on. Like, that's one of the things that I say over and over again in this book, is I almost remember nothing from this year. Even when I read the diary, I still don't remember. So, yeah, I feel like that from an intellectual point of view, that's one thing I found really fascinating about it, was even putting aside my own kind of personal experiences, just as an experience of like human identity over time through the means of a text, you know, I found really interesting.
And there is always, I guess, this tension in all diaries where they're supposed to be private. There's always this, you know, will you read it again, or will someone else, you know, find it and read it? And there is always that kind of what if, I feel, in the back of your mind, like this might be read someday.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's why, you know, like I've got two essays that begin and end the book. And the second one is called Do Not Read Me! Exclamation mark, which are the first words of the diary. So inside the front cover of the diary, which are repeated, which are reproduced as the end papers of this book, it has Do Not Read Me. Well, I mean, that's like such a postmodern statement because by definition, someone is reading you. Someone is reading that, you know. But also the way it says, do not read me. So it's like the diary is speaking, but then also the author is, you know, is the me. So, yeah, I mean, I find all of that stuff really, really interesting. And after I had finished writing the essays, I then did an AI search on, you know, postmodern theories about the diary and postmodernism. And I was like, I'm so glad I didn't do this before because every single thing that I've written in my essay, it was just like tick, 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 you know, and I thought, wow, I'm so glad I was able to generate that from my own mind and my own personal understanding. It's like I'm over here inventing the postmodern wheel all by myself, you know.
Yeah, and I like in the reproduced end papers, which A, I love your handwriting because I feel like it adds so much extra color to just what the text says. But then you list all these people who you think could maybe be reading the diary?
Yeah, my sister, my mom, my dad, my friends, yeah. And I think, yeah, some of the, there's just a small number of, you know, there's only about 100 entries from the diary that are reproduced in this, in text, but there's just even a handful that there's facsimiles of the actual handwritten pages that are in there too. And I really wanted to include that because I just love the kind of found quality of those things. And yeah, I think that the handwriting definitely does lend something.
I will confess, I had a very hard time reading some of the handwritten pages, which I usually pride myself in that. But there's some where you're like wall to wall, no spaces between the words. It just felt so dynamic and cool.
Yeah, well, there's, you know, one of the cool things about this diary, it's really small. The physical diary itself is only like 10 centimetres by 18 centimetres. So there's really only room on a page for like 100 words. So that also makes it really good for reading aloud because each page takes about 45 seconds to read aloud. And as per the title of the book, all the entries from about March onwards, it's patchy up until then, but from about March onwards, every entry is signed off leather and chains, some variety of leather and chains. They went through and counted them up, and there's over 100 different leather and chains, which I listed at the end, you know, leather and chains, depressingly absent, life, the universe, everything, plus leather and chains, leather and chains, sorely missed, leather and chains are necessary to survival, leather and chains for me no more, you know. And so I'm obviously trying out this motif and many different ways of expressing it.
I like leather and chains, dire consequences.
Leather and chains, hope like hell. And thank the Lord, mercy and love, leather and chains.
I appreciate as well how you saved what that reference was for that last essay rather than giving it to us. Like as soon as the sign off emerged.
So that we've got to maintain the theater of the mind, you know.
So I know you touched on it a little bit earlier, but you know, other than that kind of cool kaleidoscopic collage style approach to a little bit of everything, what other affectations do you think have evolved out of in your writing, have evolved out of the diary?
Yeah, I mean, when I went into this project, I wasn't expecting there to be any kind of a through line between the writing that's in this diary, terrible as it is, and the writing that I do in my adult life. But yeah, I was actually surprised by how much of a through line there is. I think there's a real manic energy and sort of direction and misdirection. That is a kind of spoken word quality to the way the diary is written, which I think manifests in my writing now, both in prose and in poetry. And yeah, that like you said, that love of kind of references and throwing things in together, a sort of willingness to go there, a kind of willingness or desire to shock or be honest. But then also like a kind of self-questioning and self-doubt, reversing, you know, constant self-interrogation and, you know, saying, I mean, like I often will say in a poem, I don't know, or blah, 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 if I'm trying to say something and I can't think of the words, and you know, sort of a willingness to accept or to document lack of knowledge or lack of understanding. I think that's all. That's all there. And just, you know, the writer of the diary is a reader. It's very, very apparent. And so, you know, someone who for better or worse, has got a great knowledge of 80s song lyrics and you know, bad Gothic novels as well as great literature. So, yeah, I think I can see actually a lot of through lines. And, you know, I think the other thing I would say about her is she wrote something every day for a year.
That's commitment.
And, you know, yeah, and that's, you know, no books get written if you don't sit down and write.
I think teenage Kate, if she were transplanted today, would be very into Bridgerton and would probably be very into Wuthering Heights remixes.
Yeah, well, it was quite great to see when Leather and Chains, the week it came out on the Unity Books bestsellers for Wellington, it was number one on nonfiction and Wuthering Heights was number one on fiction. Having said that, I think that, you know, one of the things is she probably wouldn't have watched Bridgerton, even though she probably wanted to, because she would have perceived it as being too mainstream. Mm. Because I think that the Kate of the diary is always trying to, you know, identify herself as someone who's outside the norm and who's not into whatever everyone else is into. So, she probably misses out on a lot of really good stuff for that reason.
Well, the good news is it all, lots of the times, the things that are meant to stick around will stick around, and there's a reason, like Rocky Horror still being played even, you know.
Yeah.
Decades.
Yeah,
and decades
so I
later.
Think, you know, like in the diary, I go to see Pretty in Pink. Which is, you know, an iconic movie at the time. But I remember during this same era, I never saw the film The Blues Brothers, because it was such a, you know, it was the kind of thing that boys at school were always quoting and people always watching and rewatching and rewatching on VHS. And I remember thinking, oh, that's, I'm not going to get into that. That's, you know, that's too mainstream for me. You know, I'm going to do something else that's, you know, probably less enjoyable, but, you know, more rebellious.
Mm. So your other memoir, which obviously goes beyond her essay collection, which goes beyond this one year, how do you see these two books kind of acting as companions for each other?
When I wrote that book, you probably think this song is about you, which, as you said, is a quote from You're So Vain. Thanks, Carly Simon. I only got the permission from her music rights management at the very 11th hour to be able to use that. It was literally
really?
Like two days beyond the absolute deadline that we needed to have the approval. So
well
thank
done.
God it came through. Yeah, very happy with that. But at the time I wrote that book, I intentionally decided not to touch on the diary at all, or really touch on the year 1986 at all, because I knew I had the diary. And while I hadn't really, I think I had already done Bad Diary Salon a couple of times by that stage. But I'd always sort of thought, oh, maybe I'll do something with that diary one day. Maybe I'll do a project based on it. So I just stayed away from it when I did the memoir. So, yeah, this is kind of, weirdly, this is kind of like twice or three times as long. It's only about a single year.
But it does feel kind of like I finished reading this book and then I went, I want to read, you know, what happened to Kate after this, you know, after this kind of, you know, arbitrary cutoff and there's no more diary. And I was like, I want to know what happens next. So I feel like they kind of, it's a nice prequel.
Yeah. And like when you're saying before about how, you know, you could, it made you think about things in your own life. I guess that's, you know, the title of my memoir. You probably think this song is about you. You know, I think that's one of the things about memoir is people who read memoir think about their own life. In a way, you're writing about other people's life. You're just a lightning rod for other people's reflections. And that's what I found since Leather and Chains has come out. Like, it's been interesting obviously I thought that people of my own age would enjoy the resonances and kind of feel like they would find the content relatable. But it's been interesting to me of people of different generations, older and younger. You know, like I've had some reviews of people reviewing it who aren't much older than Kate would have been when the diary was written, you know. And I think it's just such a universal experience of having a past self, you know. Well, it is. It's a completely universal experience. Mm. So how you understand and negotiate with your sense of your own past, I think is something that maybe that's why memoir is such a popular genre.
Well, and particularly now, when everyone is kind of diarizing and self-documenting, but it's happening through image and online, as opposed to having kind of quite a personal analog. You know, you can't go back and edit. Well, I mean, you could, I suppose, you can go in and scratch it out or white out over it. But it's not as malleable in the same way.
Yeah, and I think that even though the diary, you know, it's not true that a diary is a private, unself-conscious account of the self. But it's also not the same as putting it on your social media. You know, there were so many secrets in the diary that I would have not wanted anyone to know, and so many revelations, and it would have changed the course of my life if I had shared publicly on my socials the things that I was sharing with my diary. So it's very, very different in that way. And so even though, yes, you might think that your diary, when you're keeping a diary, might have an audience of, you know, one or two friends, or your boyfriend or your mother may read it, but it's so different than the kind of knowing that any person in the world could see it.
Mm. I guess, so now that the diary is out there in full and people are reading it and having their own responses to it, and presumably there are now people in your family who have read the diary in full, I think I would puke if any of my teenage diaries went out there. So I, you know, think it's incredibly brave. But how has that been for you as an experience, just of letting that go?
Yeah, I think it is difficult. It's a kind of a gradual process because, of course, you know, like I'd already written the memoir, and there's so much confronting material in the memoir, deeply, deeply personal material in it, and from my adult life as well, whereas this feels like, in some ways, this is just, it is a very long time ago, you know. Mm. and it's sort of, I was so young that I sort of feel in some ways that that insulates me from that kind of invasion of privacy element. But yeah, there are a lot of moral and ethical kind of questions around invading your own privacy in that way, invading your own privacy so that other people who are close to you, how they might feel about it, and then invading other people's privacy. So yeah, have to grapple with all of that. And I think, you know, there's ultimately something very selfish and narcissistic about writing about your own life on some level, if you are doing it with kind of honesty or authenticity. You have to be prepared to sacrifice both your own privacy but also other people's privacy, and that's not necessarily a very nice or ethical or kind thing to do. Yeah, so you just have to be prepared to live with that.
Sounds like you've grappled with it quite a lot.
Yeah, I mean, but also it's like I don't want to, like, give myself too much credit for that, because ultimately, if I, you know, I still chose to go ahead and do it, you know. So it's like, you know, I'm sorry, but not sorry enough to not do it.
And now that you're kind of a year-ish on from your daily practice of reading and reacting to the entries, which kind of has a nice parallel with what teenage you was doing, have your feelings about the diary or yourself or anything evolved or changed?
My main feeling actually is regret that I didn't, because I'd sort of thought, oh, maybe in 2026 I will keep a diary. you know, every day for 20, 26, 40 years on, you know, and I didn't. And now I really regret that. But it's like, it's March, it's too late. I would have needed to start it on 1 January, but I do regret not doing that now. I think that would have had a really nice circularity to it.
Maybe 1 January 1986, 1 January 2026.
Yeah. And I mean, part of the reason why I didn't do it was because I thought, oh, I'd just be so self-conscious having already published a book about my diary. Then I'm going to be like the overwhelming self-consciousness, knowing that I'm basically creating something to be a future book. Well, I'm going to publish when I'm 80, you know. But I do regret not doing it now, because I think that actually, no matter how self-conscious you are, there's still a lot that you can capture that's still worthwhile. And like, contemporary accounts are so amazing. I've got a friend who has a blog not related to her own life at all, but she was blogging it for her small business. And then when COVID happened, she wrote a blog every day during the COVID lockdown. And that now is such an incredible account of that time, you know, and you can't, the way that you look back on that a period versus how you experienced it day to day when you didn't know how it was going to turn out, there's just no comparison. So yeah, I think it's a really worthwhile thing to do, to have those contemporary accounts.
Well, maybe that will self-motivate me. I have a partially started journal, which I think the first entry is from like 2019, and sporadically I know I go in and write something. It's usually when I'm really upset, which I feel like is not a bad way to do it, is a bad way to do a diary. Because when I look back on it, I'm like, oh God, I was so melodramatic and sad all the time, as opposed to, just kind of going through the what happened in a day or how I was on any average day.
Yeah, I mean, there's this quote I often think of from Philip Roth. I'm just trying to find it now, when he thinks about, you know, the plot against America, which is like an alternate history. Yeah, and just how different history is when you're living through it and you don't know how it's going to change. This is this quote from Philip Roth: turned wrong way round. The relentless unforeseen was what we school children studied as history, harmless history, where everything unexpected in its own time is chronicled on the page as inevitable. The terror of the unforeseen is what the science of history hides, turning a disaster into an epic. And I think I was just thinking about that in relation to the diary, because like that practice of reading it one page at a time and writing the response one page at a time was absolutely essential. And even when I got like behind, or I went overseas for a month, so I did a whole month before I went away, but I still did it. I would just read one day, write one day, read one day, write one day, because yeah, you know, that's how our memory, one of the many, many, many ways our memory plays tricks on us, is that we interpret it through how we know things turned out. Whereas when you're living it, all of that's still in the balance.
Well, yeah, I suppose, and if you'd binge read your own diary, I suppose, then you aren't really reacting. You're reacting to the themes that you're retroactively applying to it, as opposed to the moment.
Yeah, and that's why I kind of did both, you know, in the book, because I've got the introductory essay that I, you know, wrote after I'd read the whole diary, and then the closing essay that I wrote after I'd read the whole diary, and then the middle section is, you know, the kind of real-time entries. Mm. And there's just a lot of stuff that I don't know in the real-time entries, and like one entry I'll be like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen. Well, I wonder what this means. And then the very next day it's like, oh, is that what it is? So,
this is what, yeah, I was just worried about.
Yeah, so just in a in a kind of narrative sense, it's just really satisfying to experience it that way as well.
I think one other thing you touched on, particularly with the friend you had who kept the blog throughout COVID, and you know, I think we all kind of repress how crappy, like, you know, those kind of years were. And you know, I think if we look back on things we'd written or sent each other, we would have realized we'd been documenting like a slow decline into collective insanity. But the fallibility of memory, and it's just kind of astonishing. And I was trying to think about, okay, what happened when I was, you know, 13, 14, and I maybe got a couple of memories, but, you know, it is kind of amazing how much it just fades into a blur of the past.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's one particular instance that I highlight in the book, but, you know, where I was absolutely certain if you had asked me how I felt about this thing, I would have said, oh no, I felt this way about it. I really hated this person or this situation or whatever. And go back and read the diary, and I find I felt really positively about these people. And it's sort of, it's very disconcerting, because in some ways you think, oh, I could be wrong about the facts. I could forget the facts. But your sense of the feeling and the overwhelming emotion you feel is, oh, no, that would be authentic. That is something that I would remember and that wouldn't change. So it's very humbling to kind of go through that experience. And I'm glad I did it in this order, because if I'd done the diary project before I did my memoir, I would have been like second guessing myself the whole time, being like, is any of this real? I mean, my memoir is a lot like that anyway, where I say, I don't know if this is true. But yeah, I mean, I say in the notes to my memoir, I don't consider it so much as a book about my life as a book about my memories.
And not the same thing.
Yeah. Not always. It's a very different
subjectivity of truth. You know, our emotions, facts, is fact of fact. And
yeah, for sure. And it's one thing to know that intellectually, like we all do, but to experience it firsthand with your own memories is, quite mind-boggling.
Is an audiobook in the works for Leather and Chains? Because I think that could be quite interesting.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, just in practical terms, you know, audiobooks are expensive to produce, and not that many New Zealand books make it into audiobook form. But who knows? I do think that there's a spoken word, because of its spoken word origins, you know, and having done it as the performance, I feel like maybe this does have an incarnation there. And there's a part of me that feels like it could have an incarnation as some kind of stage show or art performance art project as well. I just feel like, it could have another life. Who knows where the Leather and Chains industrial complex might go next.
I can see it, the line of branded Leather and Chains 1 year diaries hitting the shelf at like Paper Plus and Squiggles.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Well, that'd be something. I would I'd be curious to know if you've like, if 80-year-old Kate would read it again and do, you know.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I definitely think, like I already said to Bad Diaries, oh, I really hope that I'm still doing this. I want to be doing this every year. I would love to still be reading from the diary at Bad Diaries Salon when it's, you know, 40 years, 50 years, 60 years, you know, however many decades on. And I can also imagine myself doing another project on it, you know, when I'm, touch wood, 83. I just think that's one of the things I really learned from doing this project, is how different the like trigonometry of who you are, what the text is, what your memories are, you know, your perspective on it is so different. Having said that, I do think there's something unique about your youthful self. Like I feel like if I kept a diary of the year, you know, the year that we're in now, I don't think that I would ever have the distance from that I have from my 13-year-old self. And there's just something about how memory works and our youth and our childhood that's kind of, it's kind of like your Genesis in the Bible, you know, it's your origin story. And it looms very large in your psyche in a different kind of way than your adult years all kind of tend to blur into each other a little bit more, and time either speeds down or slows down or whatever. But yeah, I think your youth is a different kind of, happens on a different speed.
I can also see a very interesting thing where you take, I don't know if Bad Diaries Salon is recorded, but I'd be really interesting to hear recordings of you doing maybe those, that first entry and that last entry over multiple years, and to hear how you approach the audio and the kind of performative quality of it over time, I think could be quite interesting.
I think you'd be probably shocked to find how similar it is, because I'm nothing if not a showman. and I feel like the way that I deliver it is for maximum comical value, you know, especially those first and last entry. So I think, yeah, it might be a little bit like, you know, Taylor Swift performing on the Eras Tour, you know, just hitting her marks.
Kate in her Leather and Chains era. Loved
it. Totally.
Well, I think I'll close us off with a few bookmarks, thinking about eras. And one is that the program for the Auckland Writers Festival, which I don't know if you're going to be able to make it. I'm kind of crossing fingers. I might. Is out now, and tickets for the week-long bookish festivities are available now from 12 to 17 May. And there's a lineup of some pretty spectacular domestic and international authors headlining, from Bill Mann here to R.F. Kuang and Lily King and Maggie O'Farrell and dozens of other people. And all those tickets.
Helen Garner recently won. Helen Garner, the Australian writer, recently won a major literary prize for her diaries, her journals.
Oh, really?
And she's coming out to New Zealand. I know she has not read in New Zealand or done an author event in New Zealand for a very long time, so if ever. So, yeah, I would really love to hear her session.
Oh, cool. I didn't even know that. So filing that away as well. So all of that's at writersfestival.co.nz. And the next little bookmark is mostly for locals here in Nelson, which is in June. There's a series of workshops called Make It Nelson, where people who can do pottery or jewelry or leather craft are hosting workshops. And there's several related to books, from dry point etching to bookbinding, and also a zine making workshop kind of in mid-June. And so there's details and tickets for that at makeitnelson.co.nz. And that is it for today. Kate is on Instagram as at Poet Kate Camp. I post book things and stuff at Accidental Tokyoite. And thanks for joining me, Kate, to be a little bit booked today.
Very welcome. Leather and chains.
Leather and chains for posterity? For podcasts?
Yeah.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM, with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.